System failing thousands of children in care. Dave Gorton, Chesterfield Socialist Party, the Children's Commissioner for England, and Longfield, has described the residential care home system as broken, and accused the Tory government of a deep-rooted institutional ambivalence to the plight of vulnerable children in care. She also said, the growing reliance on private providers, some of whom are making millions, is another symptom of a system failing to prioritize the needs of children. Both the government and councils have failed in their responsibilities by leaving it to the market. These damning indictments come in three reports issued by the Children's Commissioner's Office cataloguing the crisis in this sector. The number of children in care in England rose from 64,400 in March 2010 to 78,150 in March 2019, an increase of 21%, with almost three-quarters of this growth covered by private provision. Over 30,000 children are living in an out-of-area placement, of which 2,000 are more than 100 miles from home. More than 13,000 are accommodated in unregulated homes. One report details the experiences of a teenager being housed in accommodation 8 hours' travel from her hometown. Others speak of being dumped in places they couldn't identify on a map, and then finding there was no school place for them there. Over 11% of children in care, enrolled at school in 2019, had a change of school during the school year. Vulnerable children at risk. The system's failure is placing many vulnerable children at risk of becoming victims of criminal and/or sexual exploitation. Yet still we await the social care review promised in the Tory general election manifesto of a year ago. Private provision in children's social care reports a total operating profit of £255 million, with a profit margin of about 17% on fees from local authorities. In other words, for every £100 the providers charge, around £17 is profit that is being siphoned off from care. This is one of the most blatant examples of how public money is diverted straight into the hands of private profiteers. Among the top 10 providers of children's homes, 7 are owned by private equity firms. Profit is accumulated by operating with lower costs than local authorities. The average unit cost of independent children's homes is £3,596 per week, compared to £4,750 per week for local authority provision. Much of this difference is created by driving down wage and pension costs. One children's home manager interviewed estimated a starting salary in a private care home at around £22,000 a year, while in a public home it would be between £26,000 and £32,000. Labour councils must fight when Labour councillors claim they can't fight government-imposed cuts, and have to outsource social care. All they are doing is adding their own responsibility to that of central government and adversely affecting children in need of care and those who provide it. A programme of action for the social care sector, children's and adult services, must encompass pledges from councillors to fight any further cuts, joining with local authority trade unions to formulate needs budgets and bringing failing or inadequate services in-house. Alongside this, the three major unions, Unison, Unite and the GMB, should be putting forward a united campaign for bringing into public hands all private care, and for staff to receive wage rises commensurate with their caring responsibilities and skills. This campaign should also be targeted at recruiting the million or so unorganized workers in the social care sector. Race disparity gets worse. Fight to improve living standards for all. Berethi Suba, Liverpool and District Socialist Party. Disparities in racial progress are getting worse, according to a recent report, Black People, Racism and Human Rights, by a committee of mainly Tory MPs and unelected lords. In the months after the Black Lives Matter movement erupted and spilled out onto our streets, the working class, particularly the BAME community, have seen a drastic drop in living standards. Low pay, irregular and zero-hour contracts, unemployment, underfunding and privatization of the NHS, and the shutting down of local services, have all contributed to this. The report finds that 25% of Black voters are not registered to vote. Is it any surprise when the so-called elected representatives vote in Parliament and local councils for cuts? The report also finds that the Equality and Human Rights Commission, EHRC, has been unable to gain trust in tackling racial inequality, and 3/4 of black people in the UK do not believe their human rights are equally protected. This comes as no surprise, especially with the recent government appointment of right-wing writer and journalist David Goodhart as commissioner at the EHRC. Goodhart is an infamous defender of the government's notorious hostile environment policy. This report's suggestions are likely to end up as another empty tick box exercise. Investigations into why racist divisions exist should be conducted by democratically elected representatives from communities, workplaces and trade unions. There is a huge gap for real political representation of the whole of the working class. Building such a party, organizing in the trade unions, and fighting to raise living standards for all, is the first step to winning improvements for BAME communities. But that needs to be linked to a wider fight for a socialist alternative to this capitalist system that has inequality rooted in its DNA. COVID, vaccines, Big Pharma, and the need for socialism. John Dale, health worker and secretary, Unite Union M/NG32 Nottinghamshire Health Branch. Personal capacity, news that early results from a COVID-19 vaccine, produced by US-based pharmaceutical giant Pfizer, in conjunction with German company BioNTech, showed 90% effectiveness has been greeted with relief. Another vaccine trial, by US company Moderna, has also shown 95% effectiveness in early results. People across the world desperately hope this means a pandemic's end is in sight. It has been a terrible year, since the virus swept across the globe. By the 16th of November, the World Health Organization, WHO, had recorded 54.3 million confirmed cases, with 1.3 million deaths. Many still suffer ongoing illness, long COVID. Many more have been left in pain, disability, and anxiety as overloaded health services halt diagnosis and treatment of other conditions. Vaccination could prevent COVID-19's ongoing spread, allowing normal activities to resume. Computer modeling has shown a vaccine with 80% effectiveness could reduce the peak by 85%, if given to 75% of the population with 5% already exposed to the virus. 1. Early results and safety. The many unanswered questions Pfizer/BioNTech and Moderna's vaccines are the first of many in development. 90% effectiveness is much better than hoped for. However, these are early results, based on 94 and 95 people who developed COVID-19 symptoms 7 days after their second dose of either vaccine or a placebo for comparison. So far, Pfizer/BioNTech have not issued the full data, only a press release. This does not show the severity of illness among those who did not receive the vaccine compared to those who did. The research is answering the easiest question, but not the most clinically relevant. The aim of a vaccine must be to prevent hospitalization and death, not just mild illness. How long protection will last cannot yet be assessed. Will further booster doses be needed? Might it need repeating annually? Does it protect against asymptomatic infection? If not, individuals who feel fit and well could still infect vulnerable members of their community. Does it protect the most vulnerable, including the elderly and those with other illnesses, or pregnant women or children under 12? These groups are excluded from this trial. Vaccine safety is a critical issue. In 2010, 5 in every 100,000 children in Finland developed narcolepsy, a serious nerve condition. The usual number was 1 case in 300,000 children. The 17-fold increase appeared to be linked to the pandemic's vaccine to prevent swine flu, manufactured by GlaxoSmithKline. The vaccine's development was speeded through as a dangerous pandemic was anticipated, although it turned out less severe than initially feared. The European Medicines Agency recorded 980 adults and children believed to have developed narcolepsy after receiving Pandemrix. There have been other vaccine-related serious safety issues in the past. But in the midst of a pandemic now causing about 10,000 deaths a day worldwide, the risk from delaying effective vaccines could far exceed the risk from using them, while safety evaluation continues. To have reached phase 3 clinical trials with about 40,000 participants, vaccines should have completed more limited phase 2 trials with a few hundred participants, identifying any common safety issues. As socialists, we demand that all trial designs and results are open to public scrutiny. There should be independent evaluation of the safety and effectiveness of all new vaccines and medicines under trade union supervision. Trade unions such as UKU, Prospect, Unite, and the BMA, the medical professional body, and their international equivalents, have members with the necessary expertise. This would expose any corner-cutting by profit-making pharmaceutical corporations. Anyone developing a serious side effect from a vaccine should be compensated for full loss of earnings, any care needed, and any other loss they suffer, for life if necessary. 2. Fast development, public subsidy and socialism. The speed of COVID-19 vaccines development worries many people. It usually takes 10 to 15 years to develop a new vaccine. The first vaccine against Ebola virus was approved last year, 43 years after the virus was discovered. As Ebola is mostly restricted to some of the poorest countries in the world, pharmaceutical companies did not invest in research where they expected no profits would be made. COVID-19 has caused a massive economic shock to global capitalism. Social and political shocks will follow, and are feared by governments everywhere. To try and end the disruption to their economies, they have placed big orders at very early stages of vaccine development. The market for effective vaccines is therefore huge. 117 vaccine research projects are currently recorded by WHO, of which 65 are recruiting patients. 10 are now in clinical trials. Thousands of scientists, doctors, engineers, data analysts and others have been mobilized across the world. 1,000 scientists in China are reported to be working on COVID-19 vaccines, including from the Academy of Military Medical Science. Vast sums of government money have poured into this research. See chart opposite. Corporations that usually compete with each other for markets and sales have collaborated to speed vaccine development. This alone destroys the oft-repeated defense of capitalism, that competition drives forward progress. These fast developments indicate what could be achieved if scientific and medical research was coordinated and planned to meet the needs of humanity across the planet, rather than for the profits and power of capitalists and the ruling elite. For decades, vaccines were a neglected corner of the drugs business, with old technology, little investment and abysmal profit margins. Many firms sold their vaccine divisions to concentrate on more profitable drugs, The Economist. Instead of giant pharmaceutical corporations researching copycat drugs of existing money spinners, treatments to cure many illnesses that afflict the poorest of the world could be found. Instead of squandering huge sums of money and scientific talent on researching agribusiness and food products that damage our health, similar effort could be used to grow and produce sustainable and nutritious food for all. And instead of pouring billions into researching armaments that destroy life, the money and skills could be redirected to mitigating and reversing pollution and global heating. Socialism, with democratic, working-class control of publicly owned industries, would enable planning of resources for need, not profit. The rapid development of COVID-19 vaccines gives a glimpse of the possibilities of planning to meet needs. 3. Manufacture and distribution. After developing vaccines that work and are safe, manufacturing the billions of doses needed is a major challenge. Pharmaceutical corporations often use contract manufacturers. However, few of these have the capability to produce the active ingredients for mRNA vaccines like Pfizer/BioNTech's and Moderna's, not least because they are unique and patented. Over the summer, a legal dispute took place between Moderna and Arbutus, a small Canadian company. Arbutus owned the patent to a key ingredient in Moderna's vaccine. The dispute stems back to another legal fight between the two companies in 2016. Arbutus patents have since been taken over by Genevant Science, a subsidiary of Roivant Sciences, which is itself Arbutus's biggest shareholder. These complex business schemes and disputes only serve to obscure and obstruct what should be freely available to public scrutiny. Vaccine manufacture includes packaging into small glass or plastic vials. Pfizer/BioNTech's vaccine needs storing at minus 70 degrees Celsius, requiring borosilicate glass, Pyrex, to avoid cracking. The UK's manufacturer of this glass closed its Sunderland factory in 2007, so it needs importing. As global demand for these specialist glass vials rockets, a repeat of the personal protection equipment, PPE, shortages seen during the spring could take place. Pandemic contingency planning, on a worldwide scale and in Britain, has been woefully inadequate. Storage and transport at such a low temperature also presents new problems. Domestic freezers, as found in local health centers, only go down to minus 20 degrees C. The vaccine will need to be kept deep frozen from factory to warehouse to local vaccination center, requiring a highly specialist logistics chain, including planes and lorries. This does not yet exist. Whereas PPE could sit in an airport warehouse for a few days and not deteriorate, whole consignments of vaccine could be wasted. This is a particularly important and difficult problem in large parts of the world, where electricity and roads are at best patchy, and often barely exist. In 2005, WHO estimated up to half of vaccines were wasted globally every year, mainly due to lack of temperature control and logistics to support an unbroken cold chain. A more recent estimate puts the annual cost of supply chain issues at $35 billion in wasted biopharma products, IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science. 4. NHS creaking under the strain. Once the vaccine arrives at its destination, health workers need to check each person, give the jab, make a full record, and organize follow-up, and repeat doses as necessary. But years of cuts, and pressure from the ongoing drive towards privatization, mean there aren't enough staff, even without any additional COVID-related needs. 37,800 unfilled full-time NHS nursing posts in June, a 30% drop of social care nurses. Since 2012, health visitors cut from over 10,000 to 6,600, since 2015. Or 3% drop in GP numbers, since 2017. Where will the vaccination staff come from? Will they be taken away from other pressing work? 2021 will be another year in which people suffering with non-covered health problems are forced to wait for the care they need. Those who can afford it will be tempted to pay for private treatment, rather than wait in pain or failing health. The rest will suffer, and some will prematurely die, or experience more permanent disability. An immediate 15% pay rise for all health workers would help get back some of those who left in recent years, unable to afford the 20% real terms pay cut, since 2010. New staff could be recruited from those made unemployed elsewhere, to carry out tasks like record keeping and data collection. 5. Not for profit? Several of the biggest pharmaceutical companies have claimed they are not developing COVID-19 vaccines to make big profits. Indeed, some say they will sell their vaccines at cost price. But who can believe them? AstraZeneca partnered with Oxford University to produce a vaccine discovered at the university's Jenner Institute, says it will sell the vaccine at no profit while the pandemic continues. However, it will decide when the pandemic is over and then raise the price as soon as July 2021. It could then sell hundreds of millions more doses with a hefty profit. Johnson & Johnson has made a similar claim, to sell their vaccine on a not-for-profit basis for emergency pandemic use. Who will decide when the emergency is over? Pfizer's chief executive, Albert Bourla, said the company will make a very, very marginal profit at this stage. He has also said he doesn't agree with those who say COVID-19 vaccine developers should forgo profits. You need to be very fanatic and radical to say something like that right now. Who is finding the solution? The private sector barons, a US financial magazine. Bourla was paid $17.9 million in 2019, clearly not enough for him as he earned a further $5.6 million selling Pfizer shares on the day the company announced its vaccine had been 90% effective. His income this past year is probably enough to supply over a million free doses in a poverty-stricken country. But while adopting a holier-than-thou stance over vaccine profits, Big Pharma has been mute over the stratospheric rise of company stocks. U.S. pharma and biotech company stocks have risen by 630% in the last year. Novavax, which received $1.6 billion in government funding, has seen its stock rise by 2,000%. Big bonuses for directors and shareholders. Earlier this year, a bidding war developed among wealthy nations over PPE supplies, driving prices upwards. This also happened in 2009 with the swine flu vaccine. The same could now occur for the most effective vaccines, leading to potentially astronomical prices. Middle and low-income countries would be priced out. But if parts of the world continued to be COVID-19 reservoirs, it would be a matter of time before the virus mutated and spread back to those parts of the world where high vaccination levels had been achieved. There would be no guarantee this would protect against a new strain of the virus. Recently, fears have been expressed over mink farms in Denmark spreading a mutated COVID virus back to humans. All big pharmaceutical corporations need to be taken out of the hands of profiteers and into public ownership. This global industry shows how vital internationalism is for socialism. As a start, a workers' government with a socialist program would need to nationalize the big companies in its own country, with compensation for small shareholders in genuine need, including workers' pensions. But it would also need to appeal to workers elsewhere to take similar measures, as the industry is organized on a global scale. Medicines and vaccines could then be planned to meet the needs of all. But to give everyone a chance of living healthy lives, we also need well-paid jobs with safe working conditions, good housing, education, health and social care, healthy food, clean air and water, and action to halt global heating. Vaccines can't achieve these, but socialism can.